Okay, good morning, Chem 38 class. This is Tuesday morning, 8 o'clock, October 20th. And today we're going to do activity 11, which is energy changes of solution, solution formation, actually. So it's not just energy changes of solution, but energy changes of solution formation. And when we form solutions, what happens with the energy of the system? And so today's lecture is all about energy and energy changes, and that's what we're going to be looking at. I'm going to go ahead and start a screen share. Let me make sure I know where I'm going here. Okay, as always, let's go take a look at Canvas real quick and see where we're at Canvas-wise. The 30A1 section, we'll go to modules. We are now into module 6, I believe. So there's module 5 that we finished last week. Module 6 is all about energy reactions and equilibrium. And today's is lab activity 11, which has the green check mark next to it. It is published. The PDF is in there, and I made sure that it is downloadable. So I went through and made sure that that's all working properly. The lab 25, endothermic and exothermic reactions, we are not going to do. That would have been for Thursday, but Thursday we're going to utilize as a review for your exam that's coming up on Monday. So we'll have a review day for everyone. And I really encourage you to attend that review live, because the way that I do reviews is all about questions. It's all about what help you need. What do you need help with? Which topics? And I generally just come into it and speak about whatever it is you guys are having trouble with. So if you just leave it up to me, I can prattle on for a long time, but it may not be helpful for you because that may not be where you're having a specific issue with material. So I don't generally come into those with an agenda. So I would suggest, if you can, attending live on Thursday. All right, let's head back to Notability. And we can take a look at this activity. Mostly what this activity does is it has us take and use a couple of solutions. The setup looks basically like this. So what we do is we take a plastic cup, and that plastic cup, we place some water into the cup, and then we place some salt. And there's a few different salts that we add into this. We use sodium chloride. We use ammonium chloride. And we use calcium chloride. So these are the three salts that the experiment is done with. We place a thermometer into that cup and we measure the temperature. And so we get the initial temperature. And then this is a just a stirring stick that we move up and down in order to agitate it to try to help to dissolve the salt as much as we can. And we monitor the temperature and we see what happens with the temperature. And so we record temperature initial, and then after the time goes forward, so the temperature initial is generally for tap water, it's somewhere around 20 degrees Celsius. And then we ask the question, what about temperature final? What happens to the final temperature? Does the temperature go up or does the temperature go down? And then our job is to interpret what that means, temperature going up and temperature going down, and why that temperature is going up and why that temperature is going down. So let's take the dissolving process. Let's actually just take chemical bonds and talk about the energy associated with a chemical bond and what exothermic and what endothermic really mean in terms of a chemical reaction. So some quick definitions. If we take a look at a chemical system, and we can do this in a beaker or a round bottom. And so this is the chemical system. And you can think about this as a reaction. And so we have some material that is inside here, and we place this in a box that represents the environment. So outside of this represents everything else. We just call that the environment. We look and see which direction heat travels, temperature. And maybe we should really think about what heat really is and what temperature really is. So let's set this down here for a second. Temperature. Temperature is the average energy in a system. And heat? Heat is the total energy in a system. And both of these are telling you about molecular motion. So the hotter something is, the faster it's moving. And the colder something is, the slower it's moving. This is a theory that we call the kinetic molecular theory. So essentially, this whole concept here is titled the kinetic molecular theory. And there's more to the kinetic molecular theory than that, but that's the basics of it, is that the hotter something is, the faster it moves. The slower something is, the slower it's moving. And so motion, molecular motion, has to do with heat and temperature. And when temperature is transferred, what's really being transferred is collisions. So when we take something that is hot and moving really, really fast, so we'll say that this thing is, wrong highlighter, this thing is hot and it's moving really fast. If it hits another sphere and it bounces off another sphere, this sphere that was originally cooler and was moving slow, and maybe this thing was coming in here sort of at a slow moving, as they collide, what winds up happening is they ricochet off each other. And let's say that this is sphere one and sphere two. The one that was moving fast, this one slows down. It loses energy. So this is number one. And it slows down. It loses energy in the collision. And sphere number two heats up and starts moving faster. And energy has been transferred in the collision. This is what heat and temperature really are, is the transfer of energy through the collisions of molecules. So when you feel something that is hot, what you're feeling is the rapidly moving molecules hitting your hand, causing the molecules in your hand to move faster, which triggers sensors in your body that tell you that that thing feels hot. And when you feel cold, it is your body that is moving fast, and it is transferring energy to an object. And when you transfer that energy, your body, the molecules in your body, start to slow down, and you feel that as cold. That triggers sensors that tell you that something is cold. So the transfer of heat and the transfer of energy are all through collisions. So that's the first thing that's important. And then the second thing that's important is this idea here that I was starting with, of this chemical system of looking at heat transfer and some simple definitions. We'll actually take two of these. We'll place them side by side. If energy is moving out of the chemical system, and so the chemical system is hot, and energy is being transferred to the environment, and energy is coming out, we call that energy, as it comes out, we call it heat, we call it temperature, but more so, we're looking at something that is enthalpy. Enthalpy is a measure of energy in a chemical reaction. It has a symbol we use for it. We use a capital H. So that symbol means enthalpy. And we have another symbol that we use, capital delta. This symbol means change. And so when we put the two symbols together, delta H, this equals the change in energy. Specifically, heat energy. And it's defined as the enthalpy of the products minus the enthalpy of the reactants for a chemical reaction. So that's how we define that. And for a system that is giving off energy, we define delta H, the change in enthalpy, to be a negative value. That means that energy is being given off of the chemical system. And conversely, when the inside system is cold, and energy is transferring the other direction, so energy is now coming from the chemical, from the environment and going into the system, and the system is absorbing energy, we define this to be a delta H that has a positive value. And it may seem counterintuitive. Why does one have a positive and one has a negative? Or at least it may be counterintuitive in terms of why, when energy is given off of the chemical system, it's a negative value, but when it's absorbing energy, it's a positive value. And that was sort of an arbitrary choice in the way that they defined this. But it makes sense when we look at the energy of the reactants and the energy of the products. And we'll explain that more in a second. So here, what we want to say is energy is being absorbed. From the environment. Okay, so there's our idea of enthalpy, which is heat energy, which is telling you how fast the particles in the system are moving, and the change. And I think I want to say too here that the enthalpy, excuse me, my phone doesn't normally ring. My house phone, so we'll just pick that up and hang that up. Everybody uses cell phones these days. The only reason to have a house phone is just in case the power goes out. But the only people who ever call that are people who are looking for money or looking for donations. And we don't have time for that when I'm in class. So sorry. Okay, enthalpy is a measure of energy. And this energy, we're going to say one more thing here. We're talking about heat energy, a lot of this, but also this is a measure of energy in the bonds of the system. So let's take a look at that concept and that idea here for a minute. Okay. When we look at a chemical bond, and let's start off with an energy graph. What we can have is on the x-axis, we'll have atomic distance. And on the right-hand side here, we'll have energy. Excuse me, that's left-hand side. That's the y-axis. And basically, if we have two atoms, and let's do it with hydrogen, but it's true for all atoms. And these two hydrogens each have one electron, and they are separated by a very large distance. The energy of the system, when they are separated at this very large distance, starts off fairly high. And what they are going to do is they are going to get closer and closer until they come into a bonding distance, until they make the covalent bond. And what we find happens for this system is that the energy of the system winds up coming down. I was going to try to get it to snap in, but it's not going to snap in the way I want. So I'm going to just freehand this. The energy of the system comes down. And then if we push them too close together, the energy of the system starts going up again. And this distance right here where the energy comes down, this is what we call the bonding distance. And what that means is that if we look at these two atoms that are out here on their own, the energy of the system is high. And when they come together, the energy of the system comes down to a minimum. When the bond is made. And what that demonstrates is, it demonstrates that the system is more stable bonded together than they are with the atoms apart. And so this represents our covalent bond. Okay, so the way that I oftentimes explain these is that these are like, this is not the best analogy, but it works well enough. These are like two little bar magnets. And the two little bar magnets have a negative side and a positive side. And we know that opposite charges attract. And so when I have these two bar magnets separated, there is stored energy in the fact that they are separated from one another. And if I push them closer and closer together, at some point, the two magnets just snap together from the attractive force of the positive and negative. And when they snap together, energy is essentially released in the snapping together. And so we hear that sort of audible click as they come together. And they could do work. If I had them hooked to strings and pulleys, I could have those two little magnets do some work. And so energy is in essence, released when the two magnets come together. So the process of making a bond releases energy. That is a key important thing here. The process of making a bond releases energy. And And when we say releases energy, we're saying it releases heat. And that was energy that was stored in the system. So we can think about this as stored energy. And the opposite of that is, think about pulling two magnets apart. If you want to pull two magnets apart, you have to exert force. You have to do work to pull the two magnets apart. It takes energy to separate two magnets. It takes energy to break a chemical bond. Energy is required to break a chemical bond. Okay, so let's take a chemical reaction, a simple chemical reaction, and look at what happens when we do that chemical reaction. Let's take the reaction of hydrogen gas, and we'll need two of these, reacting with oxygen gas in order to make water. And we'll make two water molecules. So this is a gas. This one's a gas. And we'll make water that is a gas in this case as well. What has to happen here in order to do this chemical reaction is I have to take two hydrogens and I have to break them apart. And as I break them apart, what I wind up getting is I wind up getting four individual hydrogens. And I need to do the same for the oxygen. I need to break the oxygen apart in order to be able to get two oxygen atoms. And then on the other side, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take and I'm going to make four new bonds. I'm going to make these bonds that are the hydrogen-oxygen bond. So I'm going to make four OH bonds. In doing that, the reaction is costing me some energy and I'm getting some energy in return. In other words, this is my energy cost. I have to expend energy in order to break these bonds. So it takes energy to break bonds. And this is my energy gain because energy is given off when bonds are made. We'll say released when bonds are made. This energy that we're discussing in breaking the bonds and making the bonds, this is the energy of enthalpy. So this is on this side, this is the enthalpy of the reactants. And on this side, this is the enthalpy of the products. And the change in enthalpy then, when we say delta H, this equals the enthalpy of the products minus the enthalpy of the reactants. And this chemical reaction, when we take hydrogen and we take oxygen and we put them together and we make water in this way, this is a reaction that we sometimes do as a demo where we take the hydrogen gas and the oxygen gas and we put them in a balloon. And when we put them in a balloon, we put them in the right ratios. And we usually take this balloon and we hold it way far away with a really long stick. And so there's hydrogen in here and there's oxygen in here. And then we take a second stick. And on the second stick, we usually have attached a little candle with a little flame on it. And as soon as we put that flame to that balloon, we get this huge explosion. This thing just rips apart and we get a big fireball and a big explosion. And what happens is we produce water that comes out of that. And so that explosion, we say plus energy. Energy is a product. In energy being a product of this reaction, what that tells us is it tells us about which one of these sides had more energy in it. If I take a look at my energy cost and my energy gain, if energy comes out and we have extra energy, then that means that my gain must have been larger than my cost. In other words, what it says is for this chemical reaction, if I take this picture here and we put it down below this, what it says is that the energy of my products, this guy here, was bigger than the energy of my reactants. I'm going to rearrange everything so it actually kind of fits in here. And so the energy of my products was bigger than the energy of my reactants. And because of that, what we wind up getting is we wind up getting a delta H. Wait a second, something just went wrong. I'm going to draw it out. So these are my reactants and my products. And because that's what I did wrong. It's not that my products have more energy. I'm drawing it the wrong way that I wanted to do this. All right, scratch that for a second. What that really means is that I was doing it correctly, except for the way that I was about to interpret it and drawing it. It means that that there is more energy that is given off in the products than the energy that was consumed in the reactants. And so in an energy diagram, this is the way that we draw that in an energy diagram. And I'll explain why I was having an issue just a second. Let's do this as an energy diagram. This now is enthalpy. And this is what we call a reaction coordinate. It's not time. It's really sort of a bond distance or a atomic distance. And it tracks the reaction progression. And what we're doing here, these reactants, these are my hydrogen and oxygen, and these products are my water molecules. And we can see that the amount of energy or enthalpy that we have here, this is a high value. And down here, this is a relatively low value. And so if we just say that this down here is zero, so that this will be sort of relative enthalpy, then what we have is this, the reactants minus the products. So, the products minus reactants. So we have this low value, subtract a high value. And if we do it that way, delta H equals H of the products minus H of the reactants. And I'm tempted to put numbers on here, but I don't think that we need to. Then what we find here is that delta H equals a small value minus a large value. And that this is going to equal a negative value. That energy is given off in this system. So this is delta H equals negative value. And this energy diagram, when this happens, we give this a specific name. We call this an exothermic reaction. So this is what an exothermic reaction looks like. And so an exothermic reaction, we can now give it a definition in terms of what an exothermic reaction is. An exothermic reaction is a reaction where the reactants are higher in energy than the products. Exothermic is a reaction or process where the reactants are higher in energy than the products. And by higher in energy, we're really talking about the energy that is stored in the chemical bonds. So what we're saying is that it takes more energy to, it takes less energy to break the bonds than it does for the energy that is given off when the new bonds are made. So that's another thing that we want to say here. It takes less energy to break the bonds of the reactants than the energy given off in making the bonds of the products. However, the opposite can also be true. So when we take a chemical reaction, there are some chemical reactions where this is actually reversed. So there are some chemical reactions that look like this. Some chemical reactions, when we take and break the bonds, it takes more energy than the amount of energy given off from the products. And those types of energy diagrams look like this. So here what I get is I get my products and my reactants. we have H, enthalpy, reaction coordinate. And in this case, when I look at the delta H, now what I'm doing is I'm going up in energy. Here, the delta H equals a positive value. It is the products minus reactants. And so I'm taking a high value, subtracting a small value. And so I wind up with a positive value for delta H. That positive value implies that energy must go into the system. I must put energy into the system in order to make the products. In an endothermic system, the products release less energy. Then is consumed in breaking the bonds in the reactants. And therefore, energy is required to make the reaction go. And so that energy comes from the environment. So this is an example of when we took, I'm gonna just go grab that picture and we'll put these two pictures next to things. So this last system that we just did, this is this system. This is endothermic, where energy is being transferred into the system. And the other one that we did that was up here, and I can't really fit the picture in there. I didn't leave enough room to fit it in there with all my definitions. This is the one where the energy is coming off of the system to the environment. Okay, so we have these new terms now, exothermic and endothermic. And the experiment that we were supposed to do today was looking at the dissolving of these salts and then telling whether or not the system was endothermic or exothermic. So that's the first part of this morning of what we're supposed to do. And looking at what happens with that, there's another part that happens as well. So this is something that is not in the book and is another type of stored energy. And that is what we call entropy. Entropy is a measure of disorder. Not order, but disorder. And so when we have a system that is a solid and it's a very ordered crystal and all of the material that is inside this crystal is all lined up very rigidly inside the crystal and it's highly organized. This has very low disorder. And when we take that system and we add energy to it, the system can change phase and go from something like a solid to a liquid. And in the liquid now, the particles have free movement and can move all over the place. They can go any direction they want, and they're all traveling different speeds and different directions. And so in this liquid now, we have high disorder. disorder is a really interesting principle in that it is a huge driving force for many of the chemical reactions that we see, and a huge driving force for how the universe works. In essence, the universe is always moving in the direction of high disorder, of more disorder. So the universe is always wanting to move in this direction, and it doesn't like to go backwards. I like to think of it as like a kid's room. You go in and you straighten up your kid's room, and 5 minutes later, the kids have just like destroyed the bedroom, and there's just toys and stuff everywhere. And it doesn't go back once it's destroyed. Unless you go in and clean it, it doesn't go back of its own accord. Chemical systems are much like that. When a chemical system moves towards disorder, it doesn't go back randomly or on its own towards a more ordered system. It always tends to go towards disorder, and the universe moves towards disorder. That disorder can be a driving force for chemical reactions. And this entropy, the idea of entropy, we give it a symbol, S. And we can also talk about delta S, which equals the change in entropy. Of a system. And it's defined in exactly the same way. It's defined as delta S equals the entropy of the products subtract the entropy of the reactants. And we're not going to worry about the sign of the entropy right now. We'll come back and we'll kind of deal with that in a second. But there is an equation for all chemical reactions. And that big equation is delta G equals delta H minus T delta S. And here what we have is delta G equals something that we call Gibbs free energy. The Gibbs free energy is a measure of spontaneity. It's a measure of whether or not a reaction will go of its own accord. When delta G equals a negative value, the reaction or the interpretation is the reaction is spontaneous. Meaning that the reaction just goes. Reaction is favorable and goes forward on its own. When delta G is positive, the reaction is not spontaneous. The reaction does not proceed. And in this equation, T, this is the temp in Kelvin or degrees Celsius. Let's just say it's temperature. We'll do it that way. And so what we're going to do is we're going to use this equation and we're going to look at whether or not delta H or delta S is a driving force to make a reaction go forward. In other words, we're going to look to see, does delta H make delta G negative or does delta S make delta G negative? And all the reactions that we're going to look at, these salts dissolve, they just dissolve of their own accord, which means that for every reaction that we're going to look at today, delta G is going to be negative. For every reaction that we're going to look at today. The question is, what is making delta G negative? Is it delta H or is it delta S? Is it the energy in the bonds that is changing, that is making the reaction spontaneous? Or is it the change in the disorder in the system, which is making the reaction spontaneous. That's what we're doing today. And it's really kind of cool. Okay, so let me download the experiment, give you experimental results, and then we'll go through and we'll answer each one of these questions and talk about these questions. Okay, that's the one that I had written on. I need to find this one. Okay, so here's our lab. Here's the things that they wanted us to do. They wanted us to take, arrange four plastic cups according to the diagram, do each experiment one at a time in the following way: transfer two level spoonfuls of deionized water into the cup, or in part D, crushed ice. Record the initial temperature of the water. Make sure you read the thermometer to the limit of the device. Add one level spoonful of the indicated solid chemical, sodium chloride, ammonium chloride, calcium chloride. And then this last one is only different in that this is supposed to be ice with sodium chloride rather than water. And then stir gently and measure the highest or lowest temperature reached. Record this temperature, and that's it. That's the entire experiment. This experiment, the actual experiment part, was really super easy and really fast. And just as a reminder, we were using this image here where we were taking the salt, placing the salt into the cup. We're measuring it with teaspoons. And so the amount is not really critical. We're just looking for whether the temperature goes up or down. We agitate it using the stirring thing and we keep track of the temperature. That's the whole experiment. So out of that experiment, what we find is, I just have some data that I had written down that was representative of data that we normally get in this experiment. So I'm gonna write down that data for you. And what we find is that the initial temperature of water in the lab is usually around 18 degrees. So we'll do this at 18.0. And these are all in degrees Celsius. The final temperature that we reach over here, this one goes down to 14.7 degrees Celsius. This one goes down to about 15.8 degrees Celsius. And this one goes up to about 23.6. So the differences in the amount of energy here, this is going to be 3.3 degrees. And this is a negative 3.3 degrees. So the temperature went down. This is a negative, 1.2 degrees? No, 2.2 degrees. So the temperature went down. This one went up 5.6 degrees. So that one is going up. And the last one starts off, because we're using crushed ice, this is actually incorrect here. This is solid water. So this is ice that we're doing here. And at ice, we're starting off at 0.0 degrees Celsius. And the temperature for this one goes down to like a minus 25.1 degrees Celsius. And so this goes down in a big way, 25.1 degrees Celsius. And so this one is really going down. It went down the most. And now we're into answering the questions. And so this is one, a lab where essentially my whole goal is to beg you to try to understand the energy of the systems and what the systems are actually doing. And I'm going to answer all these questions with you. And provide the answers for this. What I want you to do is I want you to interpret these into your own words, to write them down, and to complete the answer part of this, and to turn that back in Canvas. Essentially, this lab is kind of pretty much a freebie because I answer everything for you, but it's because of the complexity of this lab. And I know that these answers, as we go through them in the beginning, the first one or two times through these problems, the answers are a little complicated. But by the third one, they start to get a lot easier. They start to make sense. And that's why I like to go through them with you as we're doing it. Okay, use your results in the table above to answer the following questions. Upon mixing, which reactions or mixtures cooled off? Oh, and I guess we should really talk. Let me take a second and talk about what's actually happening here with these mixtures, because we're taking sodium chloride and we're mixing it with water. And what is the chemical process that is actually taking place? Let's create a page at the bottom and let's look at this process of what's actually taking place. We're taking a solid salt, and the solid salt is much like we talked about before as that crystalline sort of material that has sodium and chloride ions and chloride and sodium and chloride. They're all stacked in here alternating. And they're all cations and anions. And so we have the positive charges and the negative charges. And we're taking that and we're pulling the sodium away from the chloride. So we have to pull these two apart. This is my bond breaking. And in that bond breaking, this is going to be my energy cost. And what happens is when they go into solution, the sodium ion gets surrounded by water molecules. And as it's surrounded by water molecules, there is a new type of bond that is made. It's not a covalent bond like we're used to. It's a bond between the solvent and the sodium ion, where the water molecule is solvating it, and it's doing it because of the polarity of the water molecule, where the water molecule is partial minus and partial positive. And so what you're seeing is that all the partial minuses are surrounding the sodium. And that means that there are attractive forces between the sodium and the water molecule. And so what we're getting is we're getting the sodium cation being coordinated by the water molecule. And these guys are coming together. And as they come together, this is my bond making and constitutes an energy benefit or energy given off, energy released. And the same is true for the chloride. The chloride ion is surrounded by the other ends of the water molecule, the hydrogen ends, because the hydrogens are partial positive. And so there is some energy stabilization and gain in that I am making these bonds between the hydrogens and the chlorides. And so what I'm getting is I'm getting chloride attracted to the partial positive of the hydrogen. And this is my other bond making. And so, unlike a chemical reaction, dissolving is about pulling apart the ions here, separating them in solution, and then surrounding them by water molecules. And we're looking at the energy trade-off. Is more energy being released in the bond making than is being consumed, or is it the other way around? Is it endothermic or is it exothermic? So that's what's taking place here. So they want to know, upon mixing, which of the reactions cooled off? Well, the ones that cooled off are the ones that went down. So there are three that went down. There is the sodium chloride in water, the ammonium chloride in water, and the sodium chloride with the solid water. So A, B, and D cooled off. That is the sodium chloride, the ammonium chloride and the sodium chloride with ice. Which one's warmed up? Only one warmed up. This is the calcium chloride one is the one that warmed up. So that was C. Which mixture had the least temperature change? Well, least, we're looking at which one of these was the smallest, not which one went up and which one went down, but which one had the smallest change either up or down. So that would be this one. The ammonium chloride had the smallest change. So that's B. Okay, now, when sodium chloride dissolves in water, the ions dissociate or come apart in solution. This is the way that we're showing this dissociation. And in fact, this is what we mean by that. This is the NaCl as a solid going to form, so there's our chemical reaction, going to form sodium ions that are aqueous, and chloride ions that are aqueous. The little aqueous symbol, when we write the aqueous symbol, what we mean by the aqueous symbol is we mean dissolving in this way, that the sodium ion is surrounded by water. So that AQ, we can think of that AQ as being surrounded by the water molecules. So that's what that AQ actually means, and that is the chemical reaction that we're looking at. They want us to take that chemical reaction and to write ionic equations like this one above for the ammonium and calcium chloride as they dissociate in water. So the ammonium chloride, NH4Cl, this being solid, when it breaks apart and goes into solution, it becomes an ammonium ion. And we write the AQ because it's surrounded by water molecules, and we get the chloride ion, and it's surrounded by water molecules as well. For the calcium chloride, we need to be careful. The calcium chloride has a 2 for the chlorides. So this piece right here, we need to be careful of that 2, and the way that we're careful with it is that we write calcium. Calcium is a 2+. Ion, and then we get 2 chloride ions. And the 2 goes from being a subscript into being a coefficient. It's really important that it is not Cl2-. That just doesn't exist. And so we need to be careful that my subscript becomes a coefficient. How's that looking? We're doing okay? All right. Is the dissolving of ammonium chloride an exothermic or endothermic process? Explain. Rewrite the ionic equation from question 4, but this time include heat on the appropriate side. There's not very much room in this box to answer this question, because I'd like to actually do a little drawing to answer this question. But let's ask, knowing what we know about endothermic and exothermic, and maybe reviewing those graphs really quickly. Exothermic, in an exothermic equation, energy is given off. And as that energy comes off, I will see the temperature go up. So in an exothermic reaction, what I read on the thermometer is that the temperature goes up. In other words, and maybe I should just do these as a new drawing. In an exothermic reaction, exothermic reaction has an energy diagram. It looks like this. And energy is then coming out of this. Delta H is negative. And that means that energy is given off. From the system. And the way that I visualize that is that I can take that idea of that chemical reaction and in this chemical reaction, as it's sitting inside this system, that energy here is given off. So this is my system, my environment. And heat given off. And if I'm doing that in a chemical reaction and it's taking place in a cup, and I have a thermometer in the cup, and energy is being given to the thermometer, then as energy goes into the thermometer, what I read is the energy goes up, or the temp goes up, because the thermometer is the environment, and the thermometer is absorbing energy, the energy being given off by the chemical reaction, and the temperature goes up. So when I see the temperature goes up equals exothermic. Okay, so they want to know then that's where we are, number five. They want to know, is the dissolving of ammonium chloride exothermic or endothermic? Explain, rewrite the ionic equation in question four, but this time include heat on the appropriate side of the equation. Let's go look at the ammonium chloride. Ammonium chloride, the temperature went down. It did not go up. The temperature going down says that this is an endothermic process. Let's review that one the same way we just did. So this was exothermic. Let's review endothermic. In an endothermic, we define the endothermic as an energy diagram where the products are higher in energy than the reactants. Essentially, what we're doing is we're going up in energy. Whereas this one, exothermic, we were coming down. Delta H for this one is a positive value. And that means that energy is being absorbed. You have to exert energy to push it up the hill. That's another way to think of it. Energy is absorbed by the system. So when we take and we draw now our system and the environment, energy is going the opposite direction. energy is moving this direction. So this is our system. This is our environment. And in this case, heat is absorbed. And when we think about that as the cup and the thermometer, and we have our chemical reaction and our thermometer that is sitting in here, what's happening this time is energy is being pulled out of the thermometer. And the energy is being taken down and being absorbed by the system. So the thermometer is giving up some of its heat to the system. And as the thermometer gives heat to the system, that means that this is an endothermic process. So heat is pulled from the environment. Into the system. And that's what we're seeing in the reaction with ammonium chloride, is that the temperature went down 2.2 degrees, energy was pulled out of the thermometer into the reaction. And so this is an endothermic reaction. And so what we'll do is we will write this as the equation, ammonium chloride solid, goes to form ammonium cation aqueous and chloride anion aqueous, but they want us to include heat on one side or the other side. So what we do here is when heat is absorbed, we include it on the left-hand side. And they say heat, they actually think they say energy, but include heat. No, they say heat. So we'll do it that way, plus heat. So this reaction is an endothermic reaction. Heat is absorbed. And that means that heat is a reactant. Notice that we don't use a plus or a minus for heat. It's just a matter of whether it is a reactant or a product. So that when delta H equals a positive value, that positive value correlates with heat being a reactant. Is the dissolving of ammonium chloride a spontaneous process? Does it occur with an increase or a decrease in entropy? Consider both the system and the surroundings. What is the driving force for spontaneous change here? This question is more complicated, and we need to take a second and break this question down. So let's look at what's happening here with this question. All right, that's question six. I want to make sure I get the question right. It is, it's question six. All right, we're gonna deal with question six down here. In question six, they're asking, number one, is the reaction spontaneous? And the answer is yes. We didn't do anything to make this reaction go. We didn't do anything to make the ammonium chloride dissolve. The ammonium chloride dissolved of its own accord. We may have stirred it a little, but we didn't add heat or change the temperature by putting fire underneath it or putting ice around it. We didn't do any of those things. The reaction just did its own thing, and the temperature went up or down accordingly based on whatever the universe wanted to do. So the reaction was entirely the universe doing it, and the reaction was spontaneous. So when they say, is the reaction spontaneous? All of these that we are observing today are spontaneous. What does spontaneous mean? When we say yes, This implies that delta G, that Gibbs free energy, equaled a negative value. Okay, the next thing that they ask about is the entropy. They want to know, is the entropy increasing or decreasing in this system? And what's happening entropy-wise? Well, when I go back and I look at the dissolving process and what a dissolving process looks like, if I take a system that is got very low disorder and I make it very high disorder, then what winds up happening is that the system is going to a more disordered state. And because it's products minus reactants, we can look at that and we can figure out whether the entropy is going up or down. So let's reread that question really quick. Question six. Does it occur with an increase or decrease in entropy? Entropy is a measure of disorder, and because it's going to more disorder, that's an increase in entropy. So the entropy is increasing in this system. So the way that we will answer this, number two, increase or decrease in entropy. This is disorder. Okay, so what we went from is we went from a solid that had ammonium, NH4, and chlorides sort of stacked in here. And very low disorder. Because remember, it's not a measure of order, it's a measure of disorder. And what we go to is a very disordered state. So we go to ammonium cations that are spread around, that are surrounded by water molecules. And they're freely moving in different directions as they want to. And so they're all in solution now, moving around. And given their freedom of movements, this is very high disorder. And so it has become more disordered. As it's becoming more disordered, this is a small number. This is a large number. Delta S equals S of my products minus S of my reactants. This is a large number. Subtract something that is small. So that's going to equal a positive value. So delta S equals a positive value. All right, let's go and see what else they want me to answer now. So we've answered part one and part two of that question. I think there is another part. What is the driving force for spontaneous change here? Consider both the system and the surroundings. So what is the driving force? Okay, now this is the hard part of the question. Which one of these is more important? Is it the enthalpy change or the entropy change? So they're asking me here, delta G, so this is part three. Actually, I don't need the line here. They just want to know part three. Is delta H or delta S the driving force? And essentially what they're asking is, if I look at delta G, we know that delta G equals negative. And we also know that delta G equals delta H minus T delta S. We want to know, is it delta G, excuse me, is it delta H that is making delta G negative, or is it delta S that is making delta G negative? So we're asking, which is making delta G negative? And that equals the driving force. Essentially, is what we're saying by driving force is it the change in the energy within the bonds that is making this happen? Or is it the disorder that is being created that is making this happen? That's the question that we're asking. Is it the energy in the bonds and the change of that energy in bonds? Or is it the disorder? And both of these can cause a chemical reaction to happen. We're just interested in knowing which one of these is more important in making this chemical reaction happen. That's what we're really asking. Okay, and so how do we find that out? Well, the way that I like to think about it is this way. I do it in a very hand-waving, intuitive way. Rather than dealing with numbers, let's just take a line and say, here's zero, here's negative, here's positive. And this line number represents delta G. Okay, so we ask, which direction is delta H going? And which direction is T delta S going? That's what we're asking. Okay, so now we know that the energy of the system went down. We know that this was an endothermic system. And by an endothermic system, delta H for an endothermic system is positive. So delta H is positive. We know just from the analysis that we did that delta S is also positive. So delta S is a positive value. And on the number line now, what we say is that delta H is taking me in a positive direction because delta H is positive. So this is representing delta H. Delta H is trying to push G in the positive direction. But notice that what's happening here is even though delta S is positive, it is minus the delta S. So the minus T delta S component is taking me in the other direction. So down here, I get minus T delta S. And while delta S is positive, it is that negative sign out in front, which is making that whole thing take me in that other direction. And we happen to know that delta G for all of these, delta G is negative. So if delta H is taking me into the positive direction, and I know delta G must be negative, and so this is taking me in the negative direction, then I can say definitively that what must be bigger is delta S must be bigger, and that this is being driven by my entropy. It's being driven by the amount of disorder in the system. And that's how I can tell what the driving force is. So it's this guy down here. This is the bigger term. And being the bigger term, this is the driving force. So delta S is the driving force. It is the thing that is causing this to be a spontaneous reaction. Okay, how do we fit that all in to that little tiny box? Well, is the dissolving of ammonium chloride spontaneous? Yes. So we'll say yes, spontaneous. Does it occur with an increase or decrease in entropy? That is whether or not it is endothermic or exothermic. This is endothermic. Meaning that the temperature went down. That means that delta H equals a positive value. That means that the temp went down. And what is the driving force for the spontaneous change here? The driving force is delta S, entropy. And if we wanted to, we can include our number line out here, where we can say that this is delta G, and that delta G, this dissolving spontaneous, this means that delta G equals a negative value. So here's my delta G equals a negative value. My delta H was going in the positive direction. My T delta S is going in the negative direction. And that this is my bigger term. And that's my driving force because it's taking me in the negative direction. And that's what has to happen. That's what we're really looking for in terms of that guy there being negative. Okay, that is all of number six. Now they get faster. Is the dissolving of calcium chloride an exothermic or endothermic process? Explain. Rewrite the ionic equation from question four, showing heat as a reactant or product. Is the dissolving of calcium chloride? Let's go back and look at our data. Now we're looking at this one. Calcium chloride, the temperature went up. This is an exothermic process. Exothermic being releasing energy. So temperature is going up. Is it exothermic or endothermic? Well, it's looking like this. And this is exothermic. And the delta H is negative. And so they want me to rewrite. And what I'm going to say is that calcium chloride, CaCl2, solid, goes to form calcium ions plus chloride ions. See, I almost made the mistake there myself. I was thinking what not to do. And because I was thinking what not to do, I went ahead and did that. And we get energy or heat that comes out of this. Heat is a product. Heat is released in this case. And that's what exothermic means. So the heat then comes out as a product. And let's just highlight that. And we can highlight it over here as a reactant. Is the dissolving of calcium chloride a spontaneous process? Does it occur with an increase or decrease in entropy? Consider both systems and surroundings, and what is the driving force? Let's go look at eight. Let's do eight really quickly. Okay, so in question eight, we are asked all these same questions again that we were asked of question six. We want to know, is it spontaneous? Did the entropy increase or decrease? And what's the driving force? So those are my three questions. Question number one, was it spontaneous? The answer to all of these is yes. All of these reactions are spontaneous. And the interpretation is for all of these that delta G equals a negative value. So that's what I'm getting out of that spontaneous question. Question number two, did the entropy increase or decrease? And we'll say in here, disorder. Increase or decrease? Well, all of these are going from a solid to an aqueous solution. Let's represent an aqueous solution as sort of being ions in solution. So we've got calciums and chlorides. And these are all now aqueous and all moving around in different directions. So we went from low disorder to high disorder. And the entropy then is in all of these, we have a large number subtract a small number, they're all going positive. So delta S is positive. So delta S equals S reactants, products minus reactants. This is a big number, so large number, subtract a small number, and that's going to equal a positive value. So delta S equals a positive value. Now, we want to know which is the driving force. So we go through that little analysis again. We take our number line. This number line represents delta G. There's my zero value. This is positive terms, negative terms. And we know that delta G is sitting over here. Delta G is in the negative range. So that's where my delta G is. All right, delta H in this case, delta H, this was endothermic or exothermic. Let's go back and look at it. We had written it down. It was the answer to number 7. This was an exothermic reaction. Delta H is negative. So if delta H is negative, then delta H this time is taking me in a negative direction. I'll rewrite the equation down here again. The equation is delta G equals delta H minus T delta S. And I'll put the signs. Delta H is negative. Delta S is positive. So delta H is taking me in this direction. As a negative value. And so there, what colors was I doing? Blue for delta H. So delta H is taking me in the negative value. Delta H is taking me in the right direction. Delta S is also taking me in that negative direction. Because it is minus T delta S. And I think that's the thing that we forget. So while delta S is here, that term has a negative term in it. And so my T delta S is taking me in this direction. And what we find is that they are both taking me towards the negative. And because they are both taking me towards the negative, they are both driving forces for this chemical reaction. Both delta H and delta S are driving forces. So energy was given off, the system got hotter. That's an exothermic reaction. It got more disorder. And so the increase in disorder and the giving off of the heat were telling me that this reaction was very spontaneous and that this reaction just went. So for question now, number 8, to like kind of complete that question 8, what we say is yes, this is spontaneous. We'll say that this is exothermic, delta H equals positive, negative value. That means that the temp went up and the driving force delta H and delta S. So in other words, in our number line, what we find is that delta H is taking me in this direction with its negative value, and minus T delta S is taking me in that direction because delta S is positive, but the whole term is negative. And so these are both driving forces, both taking me in the direction that I want to go. Towards negative values for delta G. Okay, almost done. Number 9, is the dissolving of sodium chloride an exothermic or endothermic process? Explain. Is it spontaneous? What is the driving force here? The sodium chloride, let's look at it. So this one, they just want us to do all in one. The sodium chloride, temperature goes down. As temperature goes down, this is an endothermic process. So this is, yes, spontaneous. That means delta G equals negative. We said that's true for all of these reactions. It is a endothermic. That means that delta H equals a positive value. And the temp on the thermometer is going down, so energy is going into the system. And our driving force is going to be similar to the one that we did here. Delta H being a positive value is taking me in the wrong direction. So the thing that must be taking me negative is the minus T delta S. So in this one, what we find is that delta H equals a positive value and minus T delta S, where delta S equals a positive value as well, must be taking me in that direction towards the negative value. So the driving force equals delta S in this case, equals the entropy, equals the disorder that is taking me in that direction. And I think I was hitting these negatives as an important component. Okay. Number 10, describe your observations when you mix sodium chloride with liquid water on the one hand and solid water ice on the other. Any differences? Well, let's go back and look. They're talking about this one where I mixed it with water and this one where I mixed it with ice. When I mix sodium chloride with water, the temperature only went down 3.3 degrees. But when I mix it, sodium chloride with ice, it goes down minus 25 degrees for the same amount of salt and the same amount of water, essentially. This one goes down dramatically, a lot more than the other one. So that's what they're asking me here, is describe what happens. The ice and sodium chloride went down in temp much more. This is more endothermic, meaning that it absorbed more energy. The principle behind ice cream freezer is that when salt is added to ice, the melting ice absorbs heat from the ice cream and the ice cream freezes. What drives the spontaneous melting of ice when it is mixed with salt? This question right here, this is my favorite question because it explains so many things. Why do they throw ice on the road in the mountains when it snows? What is it that the ice does when they throw it on the road? Why do we use ice? Why do they throw salt on the road? Why do they throw sodium chloride on the road to when it snows in order to make the road safe to drive? It's not for traction, exactly, directly. Why do they throw salt into ice in order to make ice cream? Why does that make things so much colder? What's actually happening here? This question is the whole reason why I love this lab, because it explains something that most of the time we would have no frame of reference to understand. So really quickly, because I know I'm close on time and I got to end this thing up, but this is the whole reason I wanted to get here. And I love this question. All right. Sodium chloride. We know that sodium chloride as a solid looks like this. And so we have the sodium and the chloride ions, the chloride and the sodium, but the ice cube also looks like this. The ice cube has the water molecules all organized inside here in a crystal structure. And so we have water, solid, ice, and we have sodium chloride, solid. And when we mix those two together, what we get is we get sodium aqueous and chloride aqueous. And the water goes to a liquid. It melts it. It melts the water. So we're getting all of these ions now that in this container, I've got liquid water where the water is now all moving. And the sodium ions and the chloride ions, and they're all moving in different directions. And the amount of disorder that I've created is tremendous. So this is a huge increase in disorder. All right. So what I needed to do is I needed to put energy into the system to break apart the sodium chloride. So this required energy. This required energy to melt it. And yet that energy to do all of that was pulled from the environment. So if I take a look at the cup, and we're thinking about the cup, all of that energy to accomplish all of that was taken from the environment. Okay, so if we ask, well, how did it take all that energy? Why did it get so cold? What was the driving force for pulling all of that energy from the environment to make this reaction go forward? And the answer is, if we take a look at it, we had a huge cost in delta H. Delta H was a very positive value. I could say that this was a really big positive value, all right? And so this is my delta G. And we know that delta G is sitting over here at a negative value. So this is my zero point, and delta G is sitting here at a negative value. Well, how did delta G get negative? What happened was the minus T delta S, the delta S component in this is massive because I'm going to so much disorder. I'm melting that solid ice and I'm taking my my sodium chloride and I'm dissolving it. And so the delta S here is a hugely positive term, but I'm subtracting it, right? Because it's a negative. And so what we find is that the driving force for this is disorder. The driving force is the entropy. It is the entropy which is taking this into the negative term. And it is the entropy of dissolving the salt, but also the entropy of melting the ice. And it is the disorder which drives that. And so when you throw salt into the mountains, when you throw salt onto snow during winter, it melts the snow, but it makes it colder. So the road actually gets colder and yet the snow still melts and we can then drive on the road. And that's why it does it. And when you make ice cream and you throw salt in, rock salt in with the ice melts and becomes water, but it gets colder. And it draws that energy where? It draws it from the ice cream. It's actually taking all that energy out of the ice cream, making the ice cream colder, and that's how it turns it into ice cream. And it's disorder that is making it all happen. Disorder is the driving force. That's why this is one of my favorite labs. It's one of my favorite labs of all the labs that we do, because because we learn about disorder. And so what drives the spontaneous melting of ice and salt when it is mixed? It is the entropy, the increase in entropy. Increase in entropy, which is the disorder, which drives this. Okay, I'm a little bit over time. That's my whole lecture. I hope you enjoyed this lab. And you guys know what you need to do. Now, remember, there is a review session on Thursday. So live review session on Thursday. It's only as good as you guys make it. Show up with questions and we'll make it work. Okay, thanks. Y'all take care. And I'm gonna stop and cut the video here.